listening to the Section 5 podcast.
Welcome back to the Section 5 podcast. It's me, G, at GWebster_NBA. I'm here with Trey, at C's_Banner_18. It's a little past midnight on a Sunday morning, and the Celtics just finished a thrilling 119-114 victory over the Golden State Warriors. And you'd expect nothing less from these two teams. Every time they match up, regardless of who's on the court, who's injured, different player personnel, trades, etc., these teams seem to always have a thrilling matchup. I'm talking Michael Jackson, Red Jacket, zombies, that type of thriller, Trey. And the Celtics were victorious in this one. And the Celtics, over the last 5 years or so, I just saw this stat from Sean Grandy, have the best record in the league against the Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry showed out tonight. Jason Tatum showed out tonight. He held his own against the Chef. Actually, Curry finished with 47 points. He was unreal. 11 for 19 from the three-point line. But Tatum came away with the W. He had 44 points in his own right, 5 for 9 from the three-point line. He also added in 10 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals. So it was an exciting game, Trey. At one point, the Celtics were down 16, and Golden State was running a clinic on offense. But as usual, which has been this team's MO, you knew they'd find a way to come back. And reminiscent of the Denver game a couple of nights ago, the team just kind of exploded in the third quarter. Ultimately, it was a closer game down the stretch than that Denver game. Steph Curry tweaked his ankle. He was a little bit hobbled at the end of the game. Kemba Walker came through with the clutch three-pointer, as did Marcus Smart. And it was a great victory for the Celtics. I've been hesitant to draw any conclusions about this team, but they're 10-3 since the trade deadline. I can only imagine that has to be amongst the best records in the league during that stretch. And the Celtics have some life. They have some direction. They're starting to form an identity. And this game was won without Jaylen Brown, without Evan Fournier, and without Robert Williams, who were all out for different reasons. And still, the Celtics pulled it off against, even though they're not the Golden State Warriors, they're not Goliath State from a couple years ago. They still have Steph Curry and Draymond Green. They're still a very good team when they play well together. And the Celtics pulled it out. So, Trey, I need your quick reaction to this game. Sort of what stood out for you most, and what conclusions maybe are you taking away from this effort from the Celtics tonight?
So, yeah, we got classic Celtics Warriors tonight. You know, as you mentioned, over the past 5 years, the Celtics, you know, have played pretty well against Golden State. You know, going back to the Avery Bradley years, you know, with Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley in that backcourt, giving us defense, and then Isaiah Thomas coming in, giving us offense. We had like the perfect mixture of guys, you know, to go up against Golden State. And now, you know, you fast forward to present day, we got Jason Tatum leading the charge, going toe-to-toe with Steph Curry. You know, he had 44 points tonight. Steph Curry had 47 points. So that was a very entertaining thing to watch. I mean, Steph Curry pump faking guys into threes. He got Grant Williams with the crazy.
Yeah, he got Grant Williams ugly.
You know, but besides Tatum scoring 44 points, and as you mentioned, no Jaylen Brown, no Evan Fournier, no Robert Williams. That means there's a trickle-down effect, and other guys have to step up. And so Shemmy got the start, and I think the reasoning behind giving him the start is he's a guy that doesn't create for himself as much. And if you put him amongst the starters like Jason Tatum, Jason Tatum will be able to create an open shot for him most likely. Now, I was able to actually see Shemmy kind of like drive to the hoop earlier today. So he can do it at times, but he's better when he plays with the starters. And then you have Peyton Pritchard coming off the bench today. He had 11 points, mm-hmm. was three of six from, you know, three. And one particular play that stood out for me was when he had the ball. He was at the top of the key. You know, he's trying to get past the defender. And the defender didn't let him by. And so he passed it out to the corner. He retreated back to half court. You know, started calling for the ball again. You know, I'm open. And he gets the ball back. You know, takes a couple steps into a three-point shot and drains the three. It was a 30-plus footer. So that's the type of shot that I like to see point guards taking. Just be aggressive to shoot, because it's tough for a point guard of his size or Kemba's size to get off their shots. So you can take advantage of the defense. They're giving you a lot of space. You want to take that shot from 30 feet out. And then the other guy that we've got to mention is the newly acquired Celtic. Mm-hmm. Jabari Parker, you know, he goes by JP. We got JT, we got JB, and now we got JP.
The Duke brethren, let's talk about that for a second, because that one kind of dropped out of the blue. Like, I think it was yesterday that we found out about that signing. 2-year deal, not fully guaranteed. I don't know all the specifics, but there's some incentives going into next season that could, you know, turn this into a 2-year deal. Jabari Parker was waived by the Sacramento Kings. You know, if you want to go down memory lane to that 2014 draft, it was Wiggins, Parker, and Bede who were considered the consensus top three prospects. And then you had Aaron Gordon, Marcus Smart, and Julius Randle was sort of the next batch of prospects. And I'd like to say that, no, aside from Joel Embiid, but Marcus Smart and Joel Embiid are like the only two guys that are still on the teams that got drafted by them. But it seemed like off the bat, a savvy signing by Danny Ainge. I think Jabari Parker instantly becomes, I mean, I don't know if this is more about the state of the bench than Jabari Parker, but I think he becomes, you know, sort of the eighth or ninth guy instantly in that rotation. When you take away Semi, Taco, Carson Edwards, Tremont, that whole team that blew a 27-point lead to the Lakers the other night, all them dudes, Jabari Parker's a cut above them. And I've been adamant about saying this, that with this team, it's like a Rubik's Cube of just making the right pieces fit. And one guy, he doesn't have to be a superstar, but one guy can kind of shift people's roles and kind of make everything fall in place for this team. And I think you started to see that with Evan Fournier. And Jabari Parker even gave you a few good minutes tonight. So how do you feel about that signing? And also, I want to get your take on this, because you mentioned Semi Ojeleye in the starting lineup. And I think Semi's always mostly in there for 3-and-D, even though his perimeter defense isn't the greatest. But Romeo Langford, he only had 8 minutes tonight. And this seemed like the perfect opportunity for Romeo Langford to kind of step up and, you know, shake off some of that rust and really break a sweat and get into the groove of the game. And he barely got any burn tonight. I don't know what that was all about. Brad Stevens never ceases to amaze me. So give me your thoughts on those things. Jabari Parker coming in, sort of Romeo Langford barely getting any playing time tonight. But yet and still the Celtics getting the win.
So as far as Romeo goes, you know, I think Brad is always pretty respectful to his guys that have been around for a while. So we saw that with Tice getting to start, even though him and, you know, Tristan Thompson wasn't the best combination. You know, I feel as though he kind of goes with seniority. And Shemmy's been here since the years of us going up against the Bucks, and everybody's saying he could be the Giannis stopper. He gets the start, and I'd like Langford to play more than just 8 minutes, but hey, at least we get the win tonight. And then Jabari Parker, I love the signing. Mm. Love the signing, because as you mentioned, number two pick in the 2014 draft. And like, that's supposed to be a really good player. He's plagued by injuries. So, you know, anytime you can add, you know, a player like that to your team, and you can come off your bench and be your eighth or ninth man, that's a win, you know. Low risk, high reward.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that fadeaway jumper that he hit in the post. Mm-hmm. He had a nice little post game. He gets boards. He hustles. So like what I'm seeing so far, I like the signing. And then we can keep him beyond this year. You know, Shemmy is actually, his contract's up at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So he could technically be a replacement for Shemmy.
Yeah. He was brought in to replace somebody. And don't look now, but the Celtics quietly have taken sole possession of fourth in the East. They're half a game up on the Atlanta Hawks. It's also strange that the Celtics have went 8-2 of their last 10 games, and they're still only a game above the Knicks, which is just, I don't even know how that happened. But as well as the Celtics have played over this last stretch, they still haven't created a ton of distance between them and the other teams below them. But what they do have that those other teams don't have is Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, but specifically tonight, Jason Tatum. And Jason Tatum was the player of the week in the Eastern Conference last week. He looks like the favorite to be the player of the week in the Eastern Conference this week. And it was around, you know, last season, right before COVID hit, you know, February, March is when Tatum started to get going. And, you know, he's taken a lot of shit this season because the team hasn't performed well. And I think he's felt a lot of pressure to sort of try to win some games on his own at times. And not that he didn't trust his teammates, but he's trying to get those results. But he seems to have really settled in. No, maybe coincidentally after Kendrick Perkins kind of called him out, but Jason Tatum seems to have really settled in. And he on national TV tonight, on ABC. I usually watch the games on NBC Sports Boston, even when the national games. Used to always hear Mike and Tommy, but now it's Mike and Scal. But tonight, you know, it was good to hear Van Gundy, Breen, and Mark Jackson, and my girl Rachel Nichols cover the game. And Tatum showed out tonight. He showed exactly why he's a superstar in this league. He held his own with Steph Curry, and I don't know where this team would be without him, but thank God that we have him and we have Jaylen Brown. And I'm just excited to see what Tatum can do going forward, hopefully putting the worst of the sort of aftershocks of COVID behind him and carrying this team and everybody sort of just getting in line and seeing where this team could go. So I just want to hear your thoughts on Jason Tatum's game tonight. And there was a couple of shots that I'm like, whoa, Tatum's in it on his shit tonight. But there was that one, I think it was the end of the third quarter, where he did like a turnaround fadeaway from the baseline, where he had to like really get it up there at an angle to sort of get that shot off, because he wasn't like straightly lined up to the hoop. It was almost like he was behind the backboard, and he hit that shit nothing but net with like two Warriors defenders in his face. And I'm like, yo, Tatum's about to go off in the fourth quarter tonight. He did. So just give me your thoughts on the way Jason Tatum played tonight, sort of how he's been playing for the last couple of weeks now, pretty much since the All-Star break, and sort of what that could mean for this team's potential going into the postseason.
So I would say Tatum's looking more and more comfortable out there making plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's has the ball in his hands a lot more without even hogging the ball. I mean, he still shares it with his teammates, but when he has the ball in his hands, he's looking to create for others. And if he doesn't have anything, then he's going to pass it up. And if the ball comes back to him, you know, he backs out and then he, you know, attacks downhill and tries to make a play for someone else. You know, he's got that in and out move that he's got, that in and out dribble.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a counter for everything.
Can't stop him when he's going to the basket. When he gets downhill, his arms are so long, and he has a nice euro. Like, he can get to the basket at will anytime. There's really hardly any. I mean, in an NBA, you're not really allowed to. You can't touch people. You're barely allowed to play defense. So,
right.
He's just a problem, and he can all the thing about Tatum is he can always fall back on that fadeaway, or that mid range, or whatever that you know that ISO move that he can do. He can always fall back on that when the play breaks down. But he's starting to learn that he doesn't have to go to that first and foremost, and that if he gives the ball up, it'll find him back before the end of the shot clock on that same possession.
Yeah, so it's like he's hit that switch where he's just. He knows it's time. Like, I'm just gonna attack. I'm gonna look to get my teammates involved because when I attack, then it opens up for my teammates. So that's what we saw from Tatum tonight. And again, he scored 44 points, like going toe to toe with Steph Curry. So, you know, there's three people that I wanna thank. Of course, we gotta thank Danny Ainge. For drafting him. Mm-hmm. That brings us to number two. We got to thank, the Coangelos or one of them? I forget which one, but one of them.
The one with the burner account.
For giving us Romeo Langford in addition to Jason Tatum for Markelle Fultz. we appreciate that. And then also, third, we have to thank Magic Johnson for taking Lonzo Ball.
Yep.
Over Jason Tatum. So thank you all. We got to witness a really great performance tonight from Tatum and Steph Curry.
Yeah, and sort of the main difference, I think, tonight was both of those dudes played unbelievable. But below that, the Celtics had Kemba Walker. And the Warriors didn't. I don't know who the Warriors' second best player is right now. I don't know who it was tonight, but tonight for the Celtics, their second best player was Kemba Walker, who I tweeted looked like he had UConn on his chest tonight. He played the role of Robin to a T, and particularly in the fourth quarter, he hit some big shots, some clutch shots, and I guess before the game, he spoke to Rachel Nichols and told her that he feels as healthy as he's felt since he's been in a Celtics uniform. I'm sure he's getting tired of the load management, but Kemba looked fresh tonight. He looked quick. He looks confident. And I think that's the main difference in this team right now than it was, you know, a month or so ago, is that they have their confidence. They have their confidence. They have their swagger. And they believe that they're as good as they thought they were going to be coming into the season, and as good as they were last season when they went 6 against the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. So we got to show a little bit of love for Kemba Walker, because due to his salary and him sort of not performing to, you know, the level of a max player that you would hope, I think Kemba sort of emerged tonight too, where you have to start asking yourself, have the Celtics turned the corner? And I've been really hesitant to cross that bridge yet. I think the Celtics like still have their blinkers on. They still have the turn signals on. They're in the turning lane, but I don't know if they turned the corner yet. And turning the corner for me is like you're getting back to the Eastern Conference Finals. And you that expectation that you can get back to the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know if they're there yet. We have the Bulls coming up on Monday night. Me and you's going to be there, Trey. Section 5 is going to be at the game for the first time in at least a year. But then you got Phoenix and Brooklyn after that. And after that stretch is when I'll make my conclusion of whether or not the Celtics have turned the corner. But I'm wondering if you've seen enough. 10-3 since the trade deadline, big wins against Denver, 3-0 on the West Coast swing, come back after a long West Coast trip, down 16, still beat Golden State. The Celtics turn the corner for you?
It definitely seems as though the Celtics have turned the corner, but I'm not ready to give that to them yet. Just because of the roller coaster season we've had, I'm expecting more bumps along the way to end this. You know, coming up, we have the Bulls. As you mentioned, we will be at the game on Monday.
Sorry.
I can't wait. And then we have the Suns at home on Thursday, on the 22nd.
Yep.
The Suns have been pretty good out west. So that's going to be an interesting game as well. And then we have the Nets on Friday.
At Brooklyn on Friday night. Then after that, it's at Charlotte. It's home versus OKC. It's home versus Charlotte. And then it's home versus San Antonio. So there's an opportunity right now for the Celtics to really get going. And in the month of May, they basically have eight. I believe they have eight games in the month of May. If they can close out April strong, and I don't care if they lose the rest of the games this month, beating Brooklyn has to be one of those that's circled on that calendar.
You know what? To be honest, I don't think the Celtics will lose another game this month. I'm just going to go out and say it. I think we're going to beat Phoenix. I think because the Nets, I'm not sure exactly who they're going to have. Sure, Harden will not be playing. I'm not sure about KD. I'm assuming maybe he will play, but I think we can beat them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Hornets, we have them twice.
Yep.
We can beat them.
Yep.
The Thunder, I don't think they want to win, but we're going to beat the Thunder as well. Perfect trap game, to be honest, all of these. Like, you can't underestimate any of these teams. And then the Spurs. The Spurs as well. I mean, if DeMar DeRozan, if he's playing, if they're playing with the full squad, you can't sleep on them either. But I believe the Celtics at the end of the month could be.
Right now they're on a 6-game winning streak, right? So
add another 7 games.
They could be on a 13-game winning streak.
Yep, I think we could see that.
You know, I don't think that's outside of the realm of possibility. I think that the way they're playing, and especially if they get Evan Fournier, Robert Williams, and Jaylen Brown back, if they could just get, if they could have all those guys healthy when the calendar turns to May, regardless of what happens at the end of April, you know, they, all those games are winnable, but if they can have those guys ready, and then the entire stretch of May, they're able to get some continuity with their rotations. When they go into the playoffs, I mean, I'll tell you right now, I'm not scared of Philly or Milwaukee matchup. Those teams just really don't scare me. And both Milwaukee especially is they have to prove to me that they're a postseason team. They're pretty much a regular season team in my eyes. And Giannis has been pretty banged up. And I don't think Jrue Holiday is really scaring anybody right now. I think the duo of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum is much more formidable than any duo that either of those teams have. The X factors: Robert Williams, Marcus Smart, Evan Fournier. Those guys right there. If they're healthy and clicking on all cylinders, I mean, it could be a remarkable turnaround for this Celtics team, because just the fact that we're looking ahead at the schedule and saying, hey, the Celtics should and can win these games, where a month or two ago, it was a struggle against anybody. I don't care what team it was, against the Thunder, against the Rockets, you know, you're being down
right.
against the Pistons. Like, it was just, let's just get a win any way we can, just to sort of feel good about ourselves. Now I think this team is to the point where they smell blood, and they're peaking at the right time.
Agreed. And, you know, we talked about Jaylen sitting out tonight. Just him being out, I wonder how much longer he's going to need, because, you know, we've heard that he's had knee tendonitis.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't mind him getting some more rest, as long as we're winning those games anyways. Why not? And Fournier's nearing a return from COVID protocol. So to have him and added Jabari Parker. You know, maybe you can afford to rest Jalen a few more games. We have Phoenix coming up. We have the Bulls coming up Monday and then Phoenix.
Yeah, I remember, you know, it was a couple episodes ago and we talked about, you know, what's wrong with the Celtics. I think most of us kind of agreed that it was, you know, roster construction. And, you know, the only thing that's really changed on the roster, and Evan Fournier, let's not even count that because he's only played in two or three games. We subtracted Daniel Tice and slid Robert Williams into the starting lineup. Like, that's pretty much the major change. Tristan Thompson is back. He seems like he could be very good in a complimentary backup center role. Basically, ideally a big man version of Marcus Smart, who can give you some hustle plays, give you a couple buckets when you need it. Hopefully the high percentage shots. But maybe roster construction wasn't the problem. Maybe it was just COVID, which pretty much disrupted this team's chemistry, disrupted the rotation, disrupted guys sort of having predictable roles and predictable minutes. Because I don't know what else changed. This isn't the type of team that you expect to sort of just flip a switch, you know, in the middle of March and just go on a, you know, win 10 out of the next 13 games the way that they were struggling. So I don't know what it is, Trey. I don't know what it is that changed for this team.
I would agree with you and disagree with you. I mean, I'm agreeing in the sense of, you know, COVID. You know, obviously that affected Jason Tatum. We've heard about that. So he's been kind of able to flip the switch as of late and just, you know, just go off.
I think the Celtics have missed more games due to COVID, whether it was just protocols or actual COVID cases than any team in the league. If I'm not mistaken, I know directly that Romeo Langford had COVID, Tristan Thompson had COVID, Jason Tatum had COVID. Other guys have ended up in you know, in safety protocols, but that really disrupted this team. And it's just, you know, it was a quick turnaround from last year. Like, not to make any excuses, but I think we, as fans, we always have to remember that there's a human element when it comes to these games. This isn't NBA 2K with fatigue off. You know, there's real factors that come into play in wins, losses, and it's just been tough when these players don't even have an outlet this season. It's not like, you know, they're having a bad day and they can just kind of get their mind off of it by going out or going shopping or going out to dinner with their family. They can't do any of that because that's a violation of NBA safety protocols. So it's a testament to the Celtics that as they probably struggled more relative to expectations than any team in the Brad Stevens era. It's easy for us to forget 2019. That team probably that was the team with the highest expectations of any Brad Stevens team. But this team right here, you know, they were hovering below 500 for a good stretch of the season, and now they seem to have found their footing. So
I still do think, though, that roster construction was part of it. Coming into the season, you could have had a better rotation of guys that maybe gave you a better depth.
But what's changed? Because the roster hasn't really changed.
No, like if we had came into the season with a better constructed roster in the first place, we would have had more depth, you know, because we didn't have Fournier coming into the season. But had we had Fournier, the replacement, you know, because everyone wanted Miles Turner. But if we had Fournier coming into the season, that would have, you know, made it seem like we had more depth and perhaps we would have played better along the way. So it's like it is roster construction in a way. And when you look at, you know, the back end of the roster, you know, 10 through 15 or 10 through 17, it just doesn't look that great. So it's like, you know, I would say it's a little bit of roster construction. It just goes to show that if you can, you know, bring in a guy like Jabari Parker or any free agent, it's a good idea. If you can upgrade your roster, you want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the biggest difference is the play of Robert Williams, the fact that he's getting more meaningful minutes throughout the game and longer stretches. like that's really energized the team. You could tell it just adds a whole different element offensively and defensively than when we were starting Daniel Tice and Tristan Thompson for like 20 games and getting fucking smashed every night. I don't know what Brad Stevens was watching, but to all the rest of us who didn't even think that two bigs should be starting, and then you're giving Robert Williams 15 minutes a night. I mean, subtracting Daniel Tice sort of forced Stevens' hand. And maybe it's for the better that, you know, Robert Williams didn't get worn out early in the season. And we still yet to see, like, Evan Fournier was just sort of starting to show you why Danny Ainge is really excited about him. But then, of course, in typical Celtics fashion, he got hit with the COVID. We don't know exactly what's going on with Evan Fournier. We just know he's in safety protocols. But I heard that he was out of quarantine and back around the team. So we maybe should see him coming back soon. And it's just exciting to know that their best basketball could be ahead of them. Whereas teams like Utah and Denver, we know how good they've been this season, but there can be an open question of whether they peak too soon. You have a couple of injuries affecting both of those teams with Jamal Murray going down. Donovan Mitchell kind of had a nasty ankle sprain today. So, you know, I think that the Celtics have – it's funny that the thing that's most in their way right now is the moodiness of Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and whether or not James Harden can hit the strip club a couple of nights a week, because that team – we'll see how their chemistry is when it's actually tested during a playoff series, when those guys have barely had a chance to play together. So it's going to be interesting. But I'll tell you what, you know, if you would have told me 3 weeks ago that this is where we'd be sitting after the trade deadline, given the fact that Evan Fournier has barely been able to play, I would have been like, I don't know. Even the biggest fan of us all might have had some questions about that, but tonight I thought was really one of the best wins of the season. It was an entertaining game from start to finish. It wasn't like, you know, we got away with the win and just played bad. No, we played Celtics basketball. We had a few defensive lapses early in the game, but I'm really encouraged by what I'm seeing from this team right now, and I'm pretty excited to go back to the Garden on Monday night against the Bulls, even though they won't have Zach LaVine.
But the Celtics will have Jason Tatum.
They will, and hopefully Jaylen Brown.
Yep, and we should easily beat the Bulls.
Do you expect a Daniel Tice montage Monday night?
Yeah, he might get a little highlight reel for a second. You know, a couple clips put together.
Yeah.
You know, he was here for a while. Started his career, you know, with the Celtics.
In Boston, yep. The thing I'll remember most about Daniel Tice is just that confused look that he always had on his face after every foul. He just he still doesn't understand why he's getting called for fouls. A lot of them were bad calls, but
well, you know, just like Biden just pulling the troops out of Afghanistan, Danny had to put an end to the war on Tice.
Yes. The war on Tice, man, is lots of casualties in that war, man. He always looked like I don't know if I've ever heard Daniel Tice's voice. I just see him complaining about calls, and he looks like whenever he's complaining about a call, he looks like he's not speaking English. It's just hilarious. But we'll get to see old friend Daniel Tice. Tatum's boy Javonte Green will be back in Beantown. He FaceTimed Tatum during a press conference, and Tatum picked up the phone. So that's how you know that's one of your boys. When they're on live TV, you give them a call and they answer your call. They can't send you the voicemail because everybody's watching. So any final thoughts on tonight's game, Trey, or the upcoming game against the Bulls, or anything else that we didn't cover in tonight's episode?
I just want to keep reiterating, man, that every time Tatum goes for that sidestep three, hey, it looks good to me, man. I think it's going in. You know, for me, it's the timing of it. And I think he, for the most part, he uses that shot at the right time. And and it always looks like he got a good look. And it usually seems to result in a bucket. I'm not sure the stats on it, but you know, I'm just going by the eye test. Every time he gets that shot off, it looks like it, you know, it might go in.
Yeah, and that and on the flip side, Steph Curry at 33 years old has to be wondering, what the fuck? Like, I just put on a show. I hit 11 threes. I dropped 47 points, and we still lost to the Celtics without three of the key rotation players. Lots of questions that need to be answered in Golden State, and Klay Thompson's Achilles doesn't provide a ton of answers. So it's going to be interesting to see how that team moves forward, even though there's rumors that Golden State already offered Steph Curry a contract extension. So it's kind of wide open right now. I know, and I believe Brooklyn's still the favorites. AD and LeBron have some injury issues right now. You never know what you're going to get with the Clippers sometimes, even though they're still a good team on paper. Denver and Utah have probably been the best teams throughout the course of the season, but it's a new season once the playoffs start. Philly, you still got to show me. And Milwaukee has just sort of proven to be a great regular season team, but has too many flaws in the playoffs. And I don't know if the 5 draft picks and $40 million they gave Jrue Holiday is going to solve that. I like where I am if I'm a Celtics fan tonight, after watching this game and seeing how they played over the last 2 weeks. And again, the next, you know, we've been saying this all the time, but the next 3 or 4 games are really going to tell us a lot about this team, more so I think than the last 13 games. So
I think a very interesting topic is the pressure on Brooklyn to win.
Oh yeah. Pressure's on.
I think it is, man. They don't get a pass from me. They don't get any excuses from me.
No, they don't. And that's a good point. You know, please give us Celtics Brooklyn in the Eastern Conference Finals. Or maybe it might happen in the semifinals. But if and when that matchup occurs, all the pressure is on the Nets. Generally, all the pressure will be on the Celtics because they're a team that's gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals several times and they haven't been able to break through. But the pressure's on Brooklyn. And given how I'm not going to use the S word. I'm not going to say sensitive. Given how fragile the egos, I don't know, that might be even more disrespectful. Yes. given how fragile the egos and personalities in that locker room are, it is going to be interesting to watch once the pressure really, you know, when the butt cheeks start getting tight and the pressure's on, even though they've all been there. Two of them are champions. They've all have a lot of playoff experience, but the three of them on the court together in New York City, when they start feeling that heat, it's going to be interesting, Trey, to see how Brooklyn deals with that.
Right. Cause I just want to remind everybody, they've got this year and then they've got next year left on their deals. I'm talking about the trio of Kevin Durant, Kyrie and Harden.
Mm-hmm. Kyrie and KD signed 4 years with an option on the fourth year. Is that what they did?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're both
2 years after this, and then they got the option year. Yeah, they're all in right now, and they better win. Or they're going to have a long summer, whether they like it or not. They're going to be getting it all summer from Stephen A., from Shannon Sharp, from everybody. If they don't get it done this year. So, but we got it done tonight, Trey. On the two-man weave. And I think that wraps it up for us for the Section 5 podcast. We'll probably get back to you guys sometime after Monday night's game against the Bulls to sort of let you know how it was being back in the building for a live professional sports game in the United States after a year of COVID or a year plus of COVID. It's going to be fun. I can't wait to get back into the Garden, and we'll let you guys know how that went on the next Section 5 podcast.
Peace out, y'all.
Peace.